You're listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on December 27th, 1985.
Last week I traveled to Oswego, immediately following the heavy snowfall. More than 3 feet of snow, driven by a brisk wind, had remodeled the landscape, creating a new world of stark beauty. But people were not devoting much time to contemplating the beauty. They were too busy digging out, creating huge snowbanks and varied impediments to traffic flow. I usually take the back routes. They are less traveled, it's true, but residents show a somewhat cavalier attitude about the main purpose of which the roads were intended, often stopping in the middle of the road to talk with a neighbor, or, as was the case last week, emptying their driveways of vehicles to clear the way for plowing, blowing, and shoveling. This vehicular impedimenta combined with badly rutted roads to make shunpiking a bit more hazardous than usual. Away from the roads, wherever I could see past the mountainous drifts, trees were covered with cottony snow. Every pine and spruce bough carried a heavy blanket. Under a light snow, the triangular nature of the spruce branches is emphasized, but when the snow is a foot deep or more, the bases coalesce, providing a conical shroud from which the tips of the branches emerge like fat, tapering arms, drooping under the load, instead of arching heavenward as is their wont. The effect is of a careworn traveler straining under a heavy burden. It's a true impression. It took prodigious amounts of energy to manufacture and deliver the snow, and it takes a great deal of energy for the tree to hold it in place. Great branches have been known to snap under the burden. The hardwood trees have lost their leaves, and their burden has therefore been lightened. But when they are shrouded with tiers of snow, like thick layers of cotton batting, they too must strain to hold it aloft. Across the fields, the snow was so deep as to hide all weeds and corn stubble, and in many cases to reduce bushes and shrubbery to rounded mounds projecting above the otherwise uniform sea of white. This virtual obliteration of low-growing plant life presents a particular hardship to such ground-feeding birds as larks, buntings, and sparrows. But it also can bring a boon to some birds and mammals, for it provides a platform from which new food sources can be reached once their burden of snow is dropped. Thus, the lower branches of trees, the tops of berry-bearing shrubs, and the tallest of seed-bearing weeds are easily reached by grouse, pheasant, and rabbit. I have often observed grouse or pheasant dining on sumac bobs while standing on the top of a snowbank. Of course, deer are temporarily immobilized by such conditions. They must await the formation of a crust on the snow before they will venture from their secure retreat. When these conditions persist long enough, this can produce serious stress for the young of the year, who may find everything edible removed as high as they can reach. The deep snow, however, also provides shelter from wind chill, a protective blanket into which grouse, pheasant, and other creatures would burrow to spend the chill night or to escape the blizzard. It's an exciting experience to have an early morning snowshoe hike interrupted by one or more grouse exploding from the snowbank where they have spent the night. Other benefits of deep snow are enjoyed by small rodents such as the field mouse, who find any prolonged exposure to winter wind chill lethal. Since they prefer to dine beneath the surface of the snowbank, deep snows provide expanded supplies of seeds, fruits, and tender bark as targets for their constantly extending burrows. This may bring sorrow to the orchardist, nurseryman, or homeowner who has not protected his shrubbery from the girdling effects of the mice. In the wild, the girdling of scrub apples and hawthorns is just a facet of the system of checks and balances which protects plants and animals from the curse of too much prosperity. As one who has weathered the historic snowfalls of 57-58 and 58-59 and that epic blizzard of 1966, I can attest to the extreme adaptability of the wild world. Those creatures not fitted by their inheritance to sleep in when storms prevail were about as soon as the snowfall slackened. At times when I couldn't move an inch without snowshoe or ski, they had left evidence of their activities on nearly every square foot of the recently consolidated mantle. In this temporary but graphic record of events was the substance of much learning for me. I read the stories and committed them to memory or to my notebook, to be called forth whenever conditions warrant. A tape measure snowstorm causes much more disruption to the world of man than to the wild world, where its principal upshot may be therapeutic. That's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.